Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning, October 24, 2020. How are we doing this morning? Hope you're enjoying your weekend so far with autumn being in full swing, and so glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 right here on WLIW 88.3 FM, heard live online at wliw.org. Archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed via podcasts. Well, this morning, we have a great show lined up for you. We are going to learn about the benefits, all you nutrition buffs, of coconut oil, ghee, and CBD with the founder and CEO of a company called Beneficial Blends. Her name is Erin Meager. And Erin, at a young age, has rocketed to success with her company, Beneficial Blends, which is an organic food manufacturer that specializes in private labeling, co-packing, sourcing, and consulting. Her clients include TJ Maxx, Publix, and Erin will educate us on the benefits of using coconut oil in food, on your skin, and we'll talk about a variety of CBD products that they are launching called Chillaxin. Gotta love that name. And in the second half of the show, we'll get to know Jim Richardson, who will become the new president of the PGA of America at their first ever virtual annual meeting on October 29th. Susie Whaley has been the current president, and she's done an incredible job. She was the first woman ever in that position, and Jim will be taking over as president. So we'll get to know Jim and what his top priorities are as he looks ahead to 2021. Let's first look at some of the sports headlines this week. In football, Odell Beckham has been banned from Louisiana State University's campus. Apparently, when the NFL star was attending their national championship game this past January, he celebrated the university's first title since 2007 by handing out $100 bills to the players after LSU beat Clemson 42-25. LSU docked itself 8 scholarships over the next 2 years, and they also put their recruiting visits on restriction, sanctions that the university hopes will satisfy the NCAA following a 2-year investigation that showed unauthorized booster payments totaling $180,000 to the father of former LSU offensive lineman Vidal Alexander. In baseball news, White Sox chairman Jerry Reinsdorf is attempting to block Steve Cohen's bid to buy the New York Mets, the Daily News reported on Wednesday. Major League Baseball Ownership Committee voted 7-1 on Tuesday in favor of Cohen taking control of the Mets, but Reinsdorf was the only dissenting vote. Cohen, a billionaire hedge fund manager, outbid a group including Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez. And the Best of Seven World Series is obviously underway between the Dodgers and the Tampa Bay Rays. The series was tied at 1 after Tampa Bay beat the Dodgers 6-4 on Wednesday night, and that was after LA beat Tampa 8-3 in Game 1 on Tuesday. Game 3 was last night, and Game 4 tonight. The last time the Dodgers won the World Series was in 1988. The Dodgers went to the World Series in 2017 and in 2018, but lost both times. Tampa Bay went to the World Series in 2008, but lost to Philadelphia. And finally, the Westminster Dog Show will be held outdoors at an estate about 25 miles north of Manhattan in June 2021 because of the pandemic, the Westminster Kennel Club announced this past Wednesday. It will mark the first time in more than 100 years that the famous dog show will not be held at Madison Square Garden. Back in 1920, the top prize was presented at Grand Central Palace in New York. The show is typically held in February in the Garden. And this new location, at least for 2021, will be held at a Lyndhurst estate. Siba, the standard poodle, was the one that won Best in Show last February at the Garden. And I ask you, since I am a proud owner of a golden retriever, actually, my dog, Sky, my golden Sky, who is now 13, is the son of the only golden who won anything at the Westminster Dog Show that I know of. His father won top prize in the sporting division years ago, but no golden retriever has ever won best in show. But I'm so proud that we have, you know, obviously some, he has some designer blood in him, obviously, with his father, who was from Seattle, winning the sporting category years ago. And we're not, you know, professional breeders, and we don't show our dog. We just love him so much as our son. But, you know, you don't see golden retrievers winning best in show, nor do you see, you know, labs so beautiful, you know, labs and goldens, that you don't see them winning best in show. Anyway, just a little sidebar there. But we look forward to the show this morning. And let me tell you, the sports interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. Dune, D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. Peakvision.com. That's PEAKvision.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is Aaron Meager, founder and CEO, and often you call yourself Chief Coconut of Beneficial Blends. Thanks so much, Aaron, for coming on the show.
Thank you, Anne. This is exciting.
So this show, as you know, focuses on a variety of topics in sports, fitness, nutrition, and overall healthy living. And speaking of healthy living, that is what your brand, Beneficial Blends, is really all about, right?
Beneficial Blends almost 11 years ago from my house, and we started out a coconut oil company because of all the amazing benefits around coconut and your health, and was able to continue to grow today. And we have lots of products now besides coconut oil, lots of edible oils and fats like ghee and olive, and now we also have CBD oil, which is a hot topic.
Right. I want to get into that in a second. But so Beneficial Blends is an organic food manufacturer that specializes in private labeling, co-packing, sourcing, and consulting. There's so much to talk about. Let's start first with your background, Aaron. What led you to start your own company?
I've always had a real interest in business, and so it's no surprise that I got my degree in business education, and I was actually teaching 12th graders about entrepreneurship without having done it myself. And they really encouraged me to get out there and do it on my own. And it's when I found coconut oil and read about how it could help with brain health and heart health and metabolism, I fell in love with it. And I was like, why is everyone not using coconut oil in their cooking? And so I looked in the marketplace, and there weren't a lot of brands, and there definitely were no brands talking about it being an organic product or with transparent sourcing methods, because funny enough, you actually can't source coconut oil in the U.S. You have to go overseas. And so I said, you know, I can do this. I can launch an organic, fair trade coconut oil that's good for your health. And that's where Kelopo Coconut was born.
So wait, so let's go back. So you were a high school business teacher. I love that. And how did you make that transition from, you know, being a teacher to owning your own company?
Yes, I was a high school business teacher. I was like 4 years older than the high schoolers, so I often had to lie about my age to them. And it was actually, you know, it was the recession of 2009, and I was still young at the time. And, you know, the great thing about teaching is you do have summers off. And so I was able to, you know, realize what I wanted to do, and having a fallback plan of I can always go back to teaching if it doesn't work out, right? I still had my teaching degree. I didn't have a mortgage at the time. I didn't have children at the time. And so I thought, let me go try this little business. And if nothing else, it'll help. And I can go back and tell these, you know, students more about my failures at, you know, entrepreneurship, or, you know, I'll have a success story on my hands.
So how did you get started? What was the very first step?
The very first step was commitment. I jumped in on a Monday, and I think by Friday, I had my bank account set up and my business name secured. And in the state of Florida where we're based, it's very easy to obtain all of those things. It's a very business-friendly state. And so I had all of that, and I was able to just start, you know, thank goodness for the internet nowadays. But I really did start from the very beginning and looked at, how do you import food products into the U.S.? How do you trademark your business name? How do you start your website? And I literally did every one of those steps until we were able to, and I say we a lot, it was me then, but I was able to bring it in. I was able to bring coconut oil in from Sri Lanka, which is a country off the coast of India, and bring it into the U.S., and I had it co-packed for us out in California at these organic food manufacturers, because again, in 2009, organic food was still not a mainstream thing. We think of it now as being in every aisle of the grocery store, but back then it had its own little subsection in the stores. So there were a few manufacturers out west that were doing it, and I had it packaged and I had it labeled. And then I went to a trade show called Expo East up in Massachusetts back in 2010. And that's when I first sold Calico. The very first customer was TJ Maxx out of Worcestershire, Mass.
Wow, that's not a bad first customer, TJ Maxx.
Yeah, they were a great customer. They kept us afloat until I was able to get it into more stores, pick up national distributors, and then our Kelopo coconut products you can find throughout the U.S. and all major retailers now. And then that's when we transitioned and were able to bring on manufacturing ourselves. So went away from those guys in California that were packaging it for us and opened a facility in Tampa. And that was 2014 that we opened that facility and started very small at the beginning, just about 10,000 square feet, and thought we were going to just produce for ourselves. And that quickly changed when we had two major retailers come to us and ask us to do private label for their coconut oil brands. And if you don't know, private label is where a manufacturer produces the retail brand of that product. So Publix is a big customer, a big grocery retailer down here, and they, you know, hire manufacturers like myself to private label all of their things that say Publix on the front of the jars or containers or whatever you're buying at Publix.
So you produce all of it in Tampa then?
Yes. Yeah. So now we produce all of it in Tampa. And like I mentioned earlier, we've grown and expanded beyond just coconut, but that's, people will always know me as the coconut girl or the chief coconut, as I like to say. And we do avocado, all healthy, edible oils and fats. Ghee is a big thing now, and ghee is clarified butter. And we do that. We actually, you know, cook it in our facility, and it smells wonderful every day where you go out and smell the fresh butter cooking in the facility. And so, yes, we've grown, and we're now in about 50,000 square feet from our original 10,000.
I mean, that's amazing. It seems like it's grown so fast, so quickly. Did you always have knowledge of healthy eating, good nutrition, or was that something that you had to learn as you grew the company?
You know, as I got older, the healthy nutrition thing is something that I really picked up on. When we were young, when we were kids, we played every sport. My dad had three girls. He got us into everything. So we were always playing sports and we were always active. But I always remember after, you know, swimming, we'd eat an ice cream sandwich, or we go to the 7-Eleven and get a Slurpee afterwards. There's lots of sugar involved with the sporting activities. So when, as I grew and, you know, matured, I learned about healthy eating and lifestyle, and that's what's really helped. And luckily, the general public has as well. And I think everybody's slowly starting to recognize what's in my food. I should pay attention to how it's made, how it's manufactured, you know, what benefit I'm going to gain to, you know, eating healthy, feeling good about myself. So yeah, that's definitely come over the years.
Definitely. I think we all have to educate ourselves on good nutrition. That's something you don't necessarily learn when you go to school, right, as a youngster. And I didn't realize the amount of healthy properties of coconut oil. When I started doing research for this interview, I had no idea how healthy coconut oil really is. Can you talk a little bit about coconut oil?
Absolutely. So it did previously get a bad rap because it is a saturated fat. And so a lot of times people were classifying as all saturated fats are bad saturated fats, which we're learning through further research is just not true. Coconut oil is a plant-based saturated fat versus some animal-based saturated fats. And so your brain uses it as energy. It's really popular on the keto diet when your body's in a state of ketosis. You're burning energy. You're burning that energy. And so it's really good. We've seen, you know, athletes incorporate it before their pregame if they're in a really high intensity, like sprinting activity or things like that. And so it's just, it's really good for that. I mentioned before, your metabolism. Farmers tried to use coconut oil to fatten up their livestock, and it did the opposite effect. It leaned their livestock out, so it was quickly stopped being a choice of farmers. And brain health, there's a lot of things around coconut oil and brain health. Your brain can use it as an energy source, and so that's a really good thing. There's been some trials on coconut oil, you know, being connected to Alzheimer's. So there's just really good things about using coconut oil. You can use it as a direct one-to-one replacement for any of your normal butters or fats that you use. And even if you don't like coconut, it doesn't change the taste of the products you're making. You're not going to have like coconut scrambled eggs if you use coconut in the pan instead of using butter in the pan. It still tastes like scrambled eggs or grilled cheese. And my kids love it on everything. And they also use it on their body for everything. Mom, I have a bug bite. Let's put some coconut on it.
So when you use coconut oil, say you make a grilled cheese sandwich and you use coconut oil instead of obviously butter, you don't have any taste of coconut at all?
No, because even though it smells like coconut when you start to cook it, that quickly dissipates. So you're not eating a coconut grilled cheese. If anything, it's slightly sweeter than butter, but again, it is definitely not candied coconut flavored.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. And then the ghee as well. I tried the ghee recently, and it was really tasty, and it seemed like it was a little sweeter as well.
Yeah, I also like to think of ghee as a little bit nuttier, so almost like a burnt butter, which it adds those extra flavor notes too. And so that's really good. The benefits of using a ghee is it has no lactose in it. So if you're lactose intolerant, you get to use ghee, which is essentially butter. So you get to use butter without having the side effects of it. And that's great in cooking. Again, anything savory to sweet, you can use ghee or coconut oil in. It's not limited to a specific dish or anything like that. It's very versatile in the kitchen.
And going back to coconut oil, I know it has antibacterial properties and it fights bacteria and it creates this hostile environment for viruses. And as you mentioned, it fuels your brain and gives you a lot of energy. I can't say enough about coconut oil. I just started researching it, as I mentioned, and oh my gosh, it's so healthy. I just wish I would have known this a long time ago. Now I'm going to just be all focused on coconut oil and ghee. And it's just a revelation for people who really haven't used it before, I think.
Yeah, and those body care uses are really great too. You can oil pool with it. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's a little bit hard to get used to at first, but if you put coconut oil in your mouth and you swish it around, you can do it for a few minutes. You can do it up to 30 minutes. It, you know, pulls toxins through your mouth, you know, creates a healthy mouth. Like I said, anything on skincare, it's amazing for because of those antifungal, antibacterial, microbial properties. Like the mosquito bites or the little bug bites, you know, just kind of, it's great to just rub on because it takes that pain away really instantaneously. And you're using a natural organic product on your skin. So just like we talked about being healthy on the inside of what you eat, it's also really healthy for what you're putting on your skin, which also gets absorbed into your body. So that's a benefit of using this product in both places. And I have jars in my every room in my house. I don't crisscross my kitchen one with my bathroom one, but I do have jars of coconut oil everywhere.
I love that. I love that. So now tell us about the brand Kelepo.
Chefs who know use Kelepo. That's the brand. And it has an elephant on the front of the packaging because we do source all of our coconut oil from the South Pacific, where elephants are a symbol of wisdom and maturity. They're actually led by the matriarch, which is kind of a cool nod to our company as well. And they never forget. Elephants never forget. So Kelepo is found in retailers through the U.S., on Amazon. You can find it on our website, kelepo.com, which is K-E-L-A-P-O.com.
I love it. And so as I was reading your website, you talk about the four-point diamond approach that you apply to your work at Beneficial Blends. Can you describe the four-point diamond approach?
Yeah, so it's basically, you know, what we stand for and what sets us apart from our competition. You know, I was looking back over, you know, the last few years and saying, you know, why did we get started and who are we still today? And it really came down to, you know, these four things: that we provide beneficial for you products. So all of the things that we provide, you're going to see a tangible benefit in taking. And, you know, a lot of us take vitamins, like a vitamin C, and I don't know that I necessarily can see the vitamin C working, but I take it. But, you know, using coconut oil, there's lots of tangible benefits that you'll see when you use those products. And so that's where it's the beneficial for you products that we provide. The second is our quality. Our products are certified organic. They're kosher. They're grass-fed butters that we use. It's all really high quality. We have a very stern and strict quality and regulatory department that we set up from the very beginning. We went for the biggest, baddest certifications you can, which is called SQF Level 3, which really makes sure that all of our vendors are vetted to be able to get good quality product. And that includes our third point, which is transparency as well. Knowing where your food comes from, we can trace back to the, you know, to farms to say, okay, this is where it came from. We know every step in the way. By the time it hit your basket at the grocery store, we know where that product has been.
Right. And I know you had brought up this fact that, you know, the word organic wasn't really used or known as much as it is today. Obviously, just what, back in 2009. Why do you think, you know, people are now more educated on anything organic and just sold on it completely?
Yeah, I think that there was a movement that, you know, started well before myself, which definitely enabled, you know, the work that we're doing now to move forward. But I think because people, you know, were eating, you know, these sugary foods and it was just filled with a bunch of stuff that became cheaper and cheaper to mass produce. And people were eating it and they were feeling bad about, you know, they were feeling awful. And so then people started coming around and saying, hey, wait a minute, like, we need to eat whole foods again. We need to eat real foods again. And so slowly and slowly, you know, in the 70s and 80s, people were at the forefront of this organic food movement. And now you see it in every food category across the grocery store. And having it be organic. So you can't use certain pesticides when these crops are growing. Certain things have to go into it. And now we're seeing even new movements in the food industry, like regenerative agriculture, which is a new thing that's happening. So not just the organic food for you, but how are we treating the environment? Is it regenerative? So we're not, you know, harming the environment as we're producing these organic foods. So that's a new trend in the food industry as well, that everyone's taking really serious, and it will be interesting to see how that grows and develops in the future years.
We're talking to Erin Meagher, the founder and CEO of Beneficial Blends. And I know you're getting into manufacturing CBD products. Tell us about that.
This is the exciting part of my day when I get to switch and focus on CBD. Yes, so CBD is an oil, and you actually can get it from the U.S. There's lots of farmers out west especially that are producing CBD oil. And so we got into it because obviously we're experts in oils and fats, and people wanted to blend it with coconut oil because you need a carrier oil for CBD. And so once we started realizing that consumers wanted a CBD product, and you know, we already were producing things like the coconut oil, we started looking into it. We're able to produce CBD products that can carry organic certifications that, you know, you can have transparent sourcing in, that are good for you, that have a social impact. So all of these things that go back to our 4-point diamond approach, we were able to apply to have a really high quality CBD product that you can trust when you take it.
Well, as you know, I know a lot of golfers and athletes, and I get so many people saying that they take CBD for, you know, its anti-inflammatory properties, which help alleviate soreness, and that a lot of golfers use it every day. And they talk about CBD helping in recovery with, you know, sore muscles. And then they also say it's a great calming effect as well. And of course, if you're a golfer, you know, you're trying to alleviate any kind of anxiety. So I think it's going to be really popular. What's been your experience with CBD?
Yeah, so all of the benefits that you just said are reasons why people are taking CBD. I know my dad just told me, he goes, you know, getting old, there's a different ache every day, you know, a new ache each day. And CBD can definitely help with those things, you know, fueling brain energy, enhancing your mood, you know, providing that soothing relief. So if you're not familiar with CBD products, one of the most popular ones is a tincture, where you would, you know, take a dropper full of this oil and mix it with something else. So when you're on the golf course, you can mix it with, you know, a gin and tonic or whatever is out there, you know, your water, your lemonades, your Arnold Palmers. You can mix the CBD into the beverage and drink it and get those effects of the CBD. Or you can also take that dropper and put it under your tongue and get it that way if you wanted to take it directly.
I was talking to a golf professional over the weekend, and he just swears by CBD. He just says, you know, he couldn't, you know, he had trouble, you know, moving without stiffness and soreness before. And once he started taking CBD, he feels like a new guy. And he also feels so much more relaxed, and obviously that less anxiety we were talking about earlier. So, I mean, it has changed, you know, people's lives. I mean, I know in the sports world, people are using it regularly. So I'm interested in hearing more about, you know, CBD. And I know you have a product called Talaxin that's coming out very, very soon. What can you tell us about Talaxin?
Yeah, Talaxin CBD is our new line of exclusive CBD products. And so they're tinctures, like I mentioned, roll-on creams for soothing relief. Those are really popular right now, too. So, again, the topicals, anything topically to help, you know, with all of that relieving, hand creams. We're coming out with shots and beverage enhancers. You know, we have a lemon lime, a cherry one coming out, you know, just to be able to put into your beverages. And you know, it's great because CBD has all of these great properties. And that's the fun part about my job. I get to hear all of these people tell me their stories about how it's helping them. And, you know, the same thing, I had a gentleman come up to me and he's like, Erin, I couldn't touch my toes before. Like, look at me. And he, like, you know, is springing down. Like, you know, he wasn't a spring chicken, and he's like down there touching his toes and jumping back up and like, look at it. And I think, you know, another great benefit of the CBD is that there's not a lot of, you know, the side effects. You're not taking something, you know, with wine. I love my wine, but you might have a headache the next morning with it or something like that. I think CBD is a very mild, with no side effects to it, so that you can really enjoy it without feeling like you're hooked on something.
Very important. Very important not to have to feel any kind of after effects. So
Yeah.
where does your hemp come from?
So our hemp comes from U.S. hemp farmers. And again, they go through the same vetting process that we do with all of our vendors. And there's a lot in Colorado and Arizona. And again, we go out to these farms and are actually able to vet and see the hemp growing in the U.S. And hopefully, you know, there's still some regulatory around CBD happening, but, you know, we're looking at being able to be regulated throughout all of the individual states as well. It's legal at a federal level, and now we're hoping the states all get on board, and that we'll be able to see more hemp farmers throughout the United States, not just out west, right, as most of them are right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I know it must be difficult to navigate, you know, the regulatory constraints with the product because regulations seem to differ state to state. Every time I try to look it up and see what the latest advances are, it still seems to be, you know, state to state, right?
It is, and I think that's, you know, it's all about education. It's about getting out and telling people what is CBD, what is it going to do for them, that this is a legal product. You know, we are still working on further regulations as basically where to classify it. Is it classified as a food and beverage? Is it classified as a dietary supplement? Those are the things that are coming. And so they need to be worked out, and we're, you know, confident that they will. Obviously, you know, DC is very busy at the current moment, and the FDA has had its eyes set on COVID, you know, for all of 2020. So there's been a little bit of setbacks there. You know, we thought we would be further along, but it will get there. This CBD is in its infancy, and I just love being able to talk about it to people and educate them and, you know, grow and share knowledge with them. And, you know, regulatory is not something that anyone's going to probably be talking about. You know, 10 years down the road, they're not going to be like, remember when CBD was like not legal back then? It'll be in our lexicon and it will stay.
And look how far they've come just in the last couple of years. Well, I love the name Chillaxin. That's just so creative. And you know, your slogan is "Tell pain and anxiety where to go." So I
That's
think it's
right. Are
very
you ready to
relevant.
chillax today, Anne? You need to get your Chillaxin products. And you can get them on our website. It's launching in 2 weeks. And it's Chillaxin, Chillaxin.com.
Well, I want to commend you for, I mean, you've done so well in such a short period of time. I love talking to, you know, women, success stories and business owners like yourself. And when you look back at this company, and it's really not that old, Erin, what would you say has been the secret to your success so far?
I don't give up. I don't quit. You know, that's definitely the secret. But really, to be able to come as far as we have come in the last 11 years, it's been getting good people on board who believe in the same thing that I believe in and who want to put good products out there in the marketplace. And having great products, because if we didn't have great products, nobody would buy them. So real, you know, it's a lot of stuff. And I really look at the company now, and I'm so proud of how we've grown, and we're continuing to grow. It's an exciting part of my life.
Wondering if I find it.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and my guest is PGA Vice President Jim Richardson, who's expected to be elected president at the PGA's first ever virtual annual meeting on October 29th. Welcome, Jim, to the show.
Well, thanks, Ann, and thanks for having me on. Greatly appreciate it.
So you have some big shoes to fill. I know Susie Whaley has been the president of the PGA of America since November 2018, and she was the first woman president of the PGA of America, which was outstanding.
Yeah, Susie's done an incredible job, and obviously in a very tough situation this year in particular. You know, the COVID and the pandemic has affected really everyone. And our business and our industry, the PGA of America, was no different. So her leadership, along with others, you know, throughout this has been invaluable, I think, to our industry and to golf at large. So can't thank her enough. And as you said, there'll be big shoes to fill over the next 2 years.
Well, since you brought up the pandemic, I'll ask you about that. I personally think that golf has really flourished during the pandemic because it's a sport where one can naturally social distance. So, you know, everywhere you went, golf clubs were just booked with players, and more junior players came to the game to take lessons, and families were going out playing together. And what are your thoughts about it? Do you see this upward trend with participation?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, when this really affected everyone at the beginning of the year, you know, March and April, over 50% of the golf courses in the U.S. were closed. Some just getting ready to open with their seasons, but others out in the West and South, you had to close because of what was going on with COVID. But we've seen a big boom. I'm so proud of our members around the country that were involved in, you know, in a smart way and in a sensible way, being able to get golf open under different state and local guidelines. And as you said, the last 3 months have really been up around the country. Rounds of golf are up over 20% year over year for the same time frame. So courses have been busy, people have been coming out to play. And as you stated, you know, it's an activity and a sport that obviously can be played in a very sensible manner. And so working within that guidelines and working with health officials and local political officials to be able to do that, it's not only the exercise that people can get, but the mental aspect as well, too, of people that have been cooped up and dealing with all the different things that have come with this year, I think, to be able to get out. And it's an activity and a sport that you can play, you know, as a family. Grandparents can play with grandkids, and parents can play with their sons and daughters. So we've seen a big surge of new golfers this year. We've seen a big increase in the junior space and a big increase in first-time players. So it's been great to see, and that golf can be utilized in that way for people to be able to enjoy it with everything going on.
And do you think the game can maintain these newcomers to the game? I mean, can I know that the growth has been pretty extraordinary. How does golf, you know, maintain these new players?
Yeah, and I think it's the follow-up and the engagement, right? We have people that are interested in getting into the game, or maybe they were lapsed golfers and hadn't played in a number of years, but it's, you know, welcoming everyone to come out to play. The golf is welcoming people from every background, every walk of life. And then once we have them for the first time, it's reaching out to invite them back. It's getting their information, being able to reach out to them to contact them. If one of the parents comes out, it's letting them know that you've got beginner programs for their spouse to come out and play. They have kids. We've got junior programs that they can get started, and all kinds of activities, whether it be on the weekends or they do have to work. They're not working at home right now. You know, we've got programs and twilight events that you can come out to after work. So I think it's the invitation to come out to play and join the game, but it's also then the follow-up and the engagement to keep them coming out and experiencing golf as kind of that community social hub that's welcoming to all.
And so what do you see as your top priorities once you become the president of the PGA of America?
Well, you know, the mission of our association hasn't changed in over 100 years, which is to elevate and advance our PGA members and to grow the game. So in serving our members, it's about trying to give them as many resources as possible. So We have an education department and a career services department. So it's looking at making sure that we're offering the most relevant education to our members to stay on the forefront and the cutting edge on whatever is going on in golf, whether that be teaching and coaching, whether that be through tournament activities, whether that be through merchandising golf shops and the offerings to customers. But then it's about growing the game. And so again, it's we've had great programs like PGA Junior League Golf and Drive, Chip, and Putt that have been very successful in getting juniors introduced to the game. But it's also those first-time adult golfers and welcoming them and bringing them out. So it's really concentrating on making sure we provide as many resources as possible to our members and then helping them continue to grow the game through junior programs and beginner programs around the country.
And for those in the audience who may not know, the PGA of America is made up of nearly 29,000 PGA professionals who teach all ability levels. And in addition to the pros, you have the PGA hosting the Ryder Cup, the PGA Championship, the Senior PGA Championship, the Women's PGA Championship. So you have a lot on your plate, right?
Yeah, we do. We're really association about our members, but also we have a business side. And as you stated, Anne, those large televised events are some of our largest and biggest assets. And we've got a great lineup next year for those that are golf fans and love watching golf on TV or coming out and hopefully being able to spectate in person next year after we get past some of this. But we go to some of the best facilities around the world, around the country. Next year is no different, as you said. The PGA Championship will be played in May at the Ocean Course at Kiwa Island, at the resort there, which is an iconic resort course in the Carolinas. The Senior PGA Championship is at Southern Hills in Tulsa, Oklahoma, has hosted several previous championships. Our Women's KPMG PGA Championship is at the Atlanta Athletic Club. And then, as you stated, the Ryder Cup will kind of end our championship year next fall in September at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. So great venues to showcase the best players in the world and great venues for people to be able to watch the action or come out in person.
And, you know, speaking of Whistling Straits, I understand that you served as the GM and the director of golf for the Kohler Company. And so a lot of time at Whistling Straits.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. My family and I spent 11 years there, so it's a special place. Great staff of individuals that are really passionate about the game. And, the state of Wisconsin is just a great golf state in general. So I'll be really looking forward to going back there and seeing a lot of friends that we stay in touch with and a lot of people in the golf industry in that area. So I know the golf course pretty well. Be interesting to see how the pros are playing it under that type of pressure for the Ryder Cup, but really looking forward to that event next fall.
Yeah, I know that the Ryder Cup was supposed to have been played at Whistling Straits this fall, but obviously it was postponed until next September 21st to the 26th at Whistling Straits. And can you talk about the course a little bit? I remember covering it at the PGA Championship back in, I think it was 2015, and just a stunning layout. It was a bit tricky, for spectators to get around, but I think it should provide an excellent test for the Ryder Cup teams.
Yeah, I actually think it's a better match play golf course than stroke play. And that time of year, just a little bit later, the PGAs that were played there previously in 2004, 10, and 15 were all played in August. And even that six-week shift to the end of September, typically, it's windier that time of year coming off of Lake Michigan. So I think with eight holes on the golf course that butt up against Lake Michigan, and then Kerry Haig, who's our chief championship officer, who's one of the best at setting up championship courses, there's a lot of different options you have with risk-reward holes on that golf course. Some of you may not set up that way for a stroke play event, but in match play, it's really going to be interesting and fun to see. Kerry can and Captain Steve Stricker could set it up where all the par fives are reachable in two, or they could really push it where almost none of them are reachable. There's two or three holes you can make drivable par fours. There's some interesting par threes that you can make really, really challenging. Or you can set the tees and the pins up where you might actually see a hole in one during a Ryder Cup. So many different options, but that golf course, as you said, you kind of have the natural heather. So if you get the driver a little crooked, you can really get in some trouble. You have to deal with the elements off of Lake Michigan and the wind conditions. And at the end of September in Wisconsin, you know, it could be 80 degrees or we could have a snow flurry. So it could be very interesting next year for the Ryder Cup.
And we have a whole other year to get excited about it, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, with the players now back playing, you know, pretty much a regular schedule, you know, there's so many good players on both sides of the pond, and I think so many great young players as well, too, that you know, we're really going to see a great championship next year. You're seeing what Bryson DeChambeau is doing right now and some of the younger players with Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler on the U.S. side, and seeing the strength even of the Europeans with the way that Rory McIlroy is playing and John Rahm and others. So that's become such a great global sporting event. And I think the run-up for next year, the extra year, should make it that much more exciting.
And, you know, Jim, when you look at the year in golf, I mean, Colin Morikawa winning the PGA Championship in San Francisco at such a young age, he was just phenomenal. And then Bryson DeChambeau, as you mentioned, winning the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. And then you had, on the women's side, Kim Se-young winning with a record low 14 under. After she shot a 63 in the final round at the Women's PGA Championship. So it's been, you know, for a crazy year with the pandemic, we've had some pretty exciting finishes in golf.
No question about it. And, you know, TV ratings have been strong as well. I think there's a lot of golf fans that are enjoying it. And as you said, I happened to be at the KPMG that weekend, and that round of 63 on the final day was just a phenomenal, phenomenal round of golf. I walked that golf course and played Aronimink and sure didn't see a 63 that someone would be able to shoot on Sunday. So, as you said, there's been some great golf, some great young talents, some new faces, and I think golf is in a really good position to thrive coming out of this. We're seeing that on local golf courses around the country. We're seeing that in ratings and interest from the televised championships. We just got to keep the momentum going as we head into the winter in parts of the U.S., and we'll have a really strong spring as we get out of this, you know, next March and April.
And what do you think, aside from the pandemic, what do you think will be the biggest issues in golf that you as president will have to deal with, you and your team?
Well, I think it's issues that we've been really kind of dealing with the last few years. We're, you know, it's protecting our biggest assets like the PGA Championship and the Ryder Cup. And that's really what we get the majority of our revenue from. And it's how can we utilize that to give back to the game and back to our 29,000 members so that, again, we can continue to grow the game. We want to make sure that, you know, golf is seen and operates as welcoming to everyone. We need to bring more people in from diverse backgrounds and introduce them to the game. We need to get more juniors from different backgrounds involved in the game. If we get the kids involved in enjoying all the things that golf represents and life lessons that it teaches someone, you know, you're going to get the families. And then, you know, you have people that are golfers for life. I love telling the story, you know, last holidays, man, I was visiting family in Florida. My 88-year-old father, one of my brothers and I in our 50s, and my 11-year-old nephew all played golf together. And you know, the excitement of seeing grandfather and grandson play, and they could all enjoy it at the same time. Golf's a very unique sport in the fact that people of all ages can enjoy it together, and people of all skill levels can enjoy it together. There's just not that many opportunities to take advantage of a situation like that. We just have to tell that story to more people, and we have to get that out there to more people and join it and join the game together.
Yeah, there's no better place to bond with your friends and family than on a golf course, that's for sure. Well, the PGA Show, I know, is in Orlando every January, and that is a huge, perhaps the biggest gathering of those in the golf industry. And I just read that the show will be all virtual in 2021. What was your reaction to that, and how do you think that will work exactly, Jim?
Yeah, and we've been talking about that for some time now, obviously, and just trying to take everything into effect with people traveling to what is typically our largest business gathering for the golf industry. Talking to manufacturers, you know, talking to those that have attended over the last several years, to some of the top merchandisers and buyers around the country, really getting all the stakeholders involved in the decision. So we did decide to go virtual because of some of the concerns, but working with our partners to you really prioritize the health and well-being of the entire golf community. We are going to go virtual, still offer several ongoing continuing education sessions. Several of our exhibitors will have virtual showrooms, different special events, and industry networking opportunities. So we're going to do as much as we can virtually as we normally do face-to-face. You know, typically, we have one of our largest teaching and coaching summits at the same time frame, and that will be virtual as well, too. So it'll be different, and as we kind of make adjustments, as most people have had to do this year, but we think we're still going to be able to offer very robust offerings to those that normally would attend. And then we're very hopeful, obviously, we can all meet up face-to-face in 2022.
Well, I'm glad to hear that it's still going to, you know, go on. And everybody's had to pivot. That's been like the famous word in the last couple of months, pivoting. And it seems like a virtual PGA show is a good way to go. And hopefully it will work out great. How's your golf game, Jim?
It ebbs and flows, Ed, but, you know, I love to play. It's very fortunate. Was never at a tour level, but I competed on the collegiate level. And I've got a group of friends, other PGA members in the area that I live in, Arizona, that try to get together whenever we can. So I try to play every chance I get. I actually have a tee time scheduled for this Saturday, so I'm getting out again. And my wife played growing up and played on her high school team, and both sets of our parents play, so we're kind of a golfing nut family, and my game's not too bad right now, so it's enjoyable. It's not so much a competitive game for me as much anymore as it is more about the camaraderie and the enjoyment of playing with friends and family.
Will you continue with Troon Golf? Is that what you're doing now, Senior VP of Operations for Troon?
Yes. So the PGA role is a volunteer position. So we have our association is led by an elected board of PGA members, along with elected officers that really kind of donate and give of their time. And then we have a staff of full-time employees that obviously are working day-to-day on kind of the direction that the board sets. So we've got a phenomenal staff, you know, led by our CEO, Seth Waugh, and then our board members from around the country donating their time. So my day job with Troon Golf will stay the same. You know, we have almost 500 golf courses around the world that we're involved with, and we'll continue to work with those owners and boards of those clubs and the staff to try to make sure that golf continues to thrive on our day-to-day side. And it's kind of a dual role trying to do the same, which is just trying to make sure on both accounts, both with Troon as well as the PGA of America, that we continue to, you know, introduce more people to the game and continue to grow the game and give more opportunities for people to get involved in the game.
And where are you based, Jim?
Our corporate headquarters is based in Scottsdale, Arizona. That's where I reside. We have some regional offices throughout the country, as well as internationally some offices as well, to try to help partner and support our golf courses around the country and around the world. But I'm fortunate enough to live in Arizona now, where we have sunshine pretty much every day and an opportunity to play golf quite a bit throughout the year.
I love desert golf, and I used to go out there every year to play in Alice Cooper's celebrity golf tournament. So when you see Alice Cooper and you know what a passionate golfer he is, please tell him I say hello, okay?
I will, absolutely. So well, we have to get you back out here again then if you haven't played in that or been out here in a while.
Yeah, I'd love it there. So, well, continued success, and really enjoyed catching you. I know you're expected to be elected president at the PGA's first ever virtual annual meeting coming up shortly. So good luck with all of that. And I look forward to talking to you many times during your presidency.
Well, thank you, Ann. Thanks for having me on, and greatly appreciate all you do to promote the game of golf and try to grow it through all your avenues and everything that you're involved with. So thanks for having me on, and thanks for all that you do to promote the game of golf.
Thank you, Jim. My pleasure.